Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Los Angeles burns. Some sicko is torching homeless camps. Tonight, they hit a tent city in the Los Feliz area near the Five. The fire spread to Griffith Park. The smoke makes the sunset unbelievable. The particles in the air slash the light, shift it red. They make the sky a neon wound. May waits outside the secret entrance to the Chateau Marmont. She watches Saturday night tourists wander Sunset Boulevard, their eyes bloodshot from the smoke. They cough and trade looks. They never thought the Sunset Strip would smell like a campfire.
That's Jordan Harper reading the opening from his latest novel, Everybody Knows. The great mystery writer Dennis Lehane says that if it were possible for James Ellroy and James M. Cain to produce a bastard love child, it would be Jordan Harper. That makes a lot of sense because Ellroy is one of Jordan's literary heroes. I first became aware of Jordan when I saw rave tweets for his novel She Rides Shotgun. That novel ended up winning the 2018 Edgar Award for Best First Novel by an American author. I wouldn't be surprised if Jordan wins another Edgar Award for this follow-up, Everybody Knows. This compelling novel focuses on a publicist named Mae Pruitt. She works for one of LA's most powerful crisis PR firms. Jordan writes so eloquently about the City of Angels that you feel the city is one of the characters. But in Jordan's vision, there aren't many angels. Before he started writing fiction, Jordan worked in television as a writer for the CBS drama series, The Mentalist. He's been able to transfer a lot of what he learned writing TV to his own fiction.
Sometimes I make the joke that I basically got paid to go to storytelling grad school, being on The Mentalist. The Mentalist was not just a case of the week procedural, but if you remember, like you said, he's a con man, and he always had to have a trick that he used to reveal who the killer was, which was an added layer of complication when you're telling a story like that, not to just have a mystery, which is already a difficult sort of story to tell, but have this extra layer of difficulty of having him do this magic trick at the same time.
This is brilliant. Lisbon, this is brilliant. You are a treasure. You're running this whole operation, aren't you? Hank's just the figurehead to take the heat. Huh? Tell me I'm right. You know, I should have checked the shoes.
Damn, Hank. I told you about looking at me, didn't I? You think you're so damn clever.
I learned by helping produce over 140 episodes of the show and writing 14 of them, a really strong sense of structure and storytelling that I would equate to like maybe a story to tell, but have this extra layer of difficulty of having him do this magic trick at the same time. And I learned by helping produce over 140 episodes of the show and writing 14 of them, a really strong sense of structure and storytelling that I would equate to like maybe if somebody learned how to do architectural drawings before becoming an artist. It's the most precise and mechanical form of storytelling you can do. And I think it's a really strong base to start off with.
Mm-hmm. And you said, correct me if I'm wrong, that through your work in television is kind of like poetry.
In the sense that it's very structured, like a formal poem. And I think that sometimes poets who don't learn how to write formal poetry and jump immediately into free verse, you can feel it in the softness of what they do. Whereas if somebody's kind of had that regimented training and then goes out and runs in the world where there are no rules, I think you get a much stronger writer. So yeah, I do think they're similar.
Yeah, interesting. How difficult was it for you to make the transition from writing for TV to writing novels?
Well, you know, I did actually start with short stories. Those were sort of where I began, was writing crime-based short stories, and actually used those to help me break into television by taking one of my short stories and turning it into a script that helped me get in to the world of television. So I've always, you know, had fiction as a primary thing that I wanted to do. And I'm glad I waited to really take on a novel until after I'd done a few years of television, because like I said, I think the training was very good for me. But, you know, it was just as much as I loved being on The Mentalist, it was such a relief to get to kind of write in a world where I didn't have to worry about studio notes or, you know, network rules about what you can and can't do. and write something that was just more purely what I want to do as a storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Your protagonist in your novel, Everybody Knows, is a black bag publicist named May Pruitt. What is a black bag publicist?
Well, a black bag publicist is my term. I did make the term up for a crisis manager, which is, the quick way I explain it in the book is she's a publicist who doesn't get the good news out. She keeps the bad news in. She is the person who is tasked with cleaning up the messes for the rich, powerful, and famous. And, you know, this is a real job that you can see in action anytime you read any kind of news about a powerful person who's been accused of something terrible. You're going to find a crisis manager in there somewhere. Whether or not their name gets mentioned in the story, they're there.
Mm-hmm. You made it up. Okay, now I don't feel so bad about not being familiar with the term because I've studied publicity a little bit and I was surprised. How come I've never heard of a black bag publicist? You got to get that copyrighted.
Well, partially it was inspired by the fact that John le Carré, when he wrote Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, invented the term mole to describe a spy who's undercover in another spy organization. And now that has literally become a term that intelligence communities use to describe that. And I was like, if I can actually make this term stick and get used in context where the people aren't referring to my book, I'll feel like I've kind of made a little stamp in a way that not every author gets to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that moment is coming sooner than you think, I believe. May works for one of the most powerful crisis PR firms in Los Angeles. What does she think of her job and of her employer?
But May, like a lot of the characters that I write about, is someone who does bad things and knows that she's doing bad things. I've never really been drawn to the sociopath or the, the hard-hearted person who just does evil things and revels in it or feels nothing. I'm much more interested in a character like May, who is very good at her job and it pays very well and it is exciting to her, but she does know that she is aiding bad things going on. At the beginning of the book, she doesn't see an alternative to that. And, a lot of people don't see any alternative to that at all. But that's who May is somebody who's very good at something that is not very good to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious that you mentioned that you don't really like sociopaths type characters. Is that because they're too sort of one note, not dimensional enough for you?
Well, it's uninteresting to me to be in the mind of somebody who doesn't have any conflict about what they do. And I think, to me, someone like May, I think, speaks to the way a lot of us feel when we live our lives that we kind of know aren't really making the world a better place when you do all the math. And I think it's a very modern feeling to kind of feel trapped and unable to make the world a better place, even if you want it to be that way, and that we end up going through these motions in a way that I think a sociopath is someone I want to be a villain whose head I don't get into, because there are sociopaths in the world and they're a very big problem. But that's just not somebody I want to spend a whole book with in their heads.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't think, although I find them interesting. Yeah, I think a whole book on a sociopath could get a little tiresome after a while. The opening chapter of Everybody Knows takes place at the famous Chateau Marmont Hotel in L.A., which, of course, is where John Belushi passed. And you actually wrote this chapter in one of the hotel's bungalows. Why?
Well, I'm a big believer in, this is a modern term, but forgive me, I'm a big believer in vibes. I'm a big believer in getting the atmosphere right, not just the sights and sounds, but the feeling of something and trying to transmit that. And I don't know a better way of doing that than going to the place that you're writing about and sitting there and living in it. And I did it, you're right, I did check into the Chateau Marmont for a couple of days to start the book. But I also, wrote in a lot of other places. That's the beauty of a laptop, is you can get in your car and you can drive to Koreatown. You can drive out to the beach and take a look. You can see what's there. And a big part of this was trying to capture as much of Los Angeles in a book as I could. And part of doing that means, going to those places and seeing those things that if you just try and imagine it, you wouldn't know are there.
Mm. Yeah, very well said. How do you think your opening chapter would have been different if you had not written it at the Chateau Marmont?
Well, there are concrete details in there that, again, I think there's a moment when May passes through the grotto of the Chateau Marmont, and it's so peaceful and so quiet and so beautiful, but there is a Buddha statue at the at the foot of a pond and it's been knocked over and its head has come off in the fall. And it's just this little warning sign that, you know, the world isn't as pretty as they want you to think it is. And that happened while I was there. I saw a knocked over Buddha. And those are those little details that you, you know, maybe you could make that up if you were just sitting there staring at the wall. But if you can manage to go to a place and feel the things that people are feeling when they're there, it just works a lot better. And also, you know, with one exception, every celebrity named in the book is a celebrity I have seen in the place that I saw them. So everybody who's mentioned in the first chapter at being at the chateau were there the night that I went there. And again, that's that kind of realism that, to me, realism is not the goal of writing, but it's a tool of writing. It helps create a world that feels very real and lived in. And that's what I really wanted to show to people who might not ever get to go inside the Chateau Marmont. I want them to feel what it's like to be there. And I think, while I have a good imagination, I hope, I think that, you know, nothing is better than actually being there and getting to experience that. It's a privilege to be able to do that, and I'm aware of that. But I think if you can do it, it's a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And you most definitely can do it. I was surprised to learn that you like to outline your books, because a lot of the writers I've talked to have said that if they did outline their plots, they'd lose the element of surprise that keeps them writing. Why do you prefer to outline your stories?
Well, because first of all, because this what I was trained to do in television. Television is always outlined, always planned. Mm-hmm. And so I got very comfortable doing that. But I also think there's a certain level of intricacy that you cannot achieve if you're just going ahead and hoping that, you know, it makes sense when you're done. And that's what I was really going for, particularly with this book, was a complex plot that dovetailed together pretty perfectly. And I'm very comfortable with building a skeleton and then finding a lot of my creativity on the page while I'm writing. I might do an outline that says, you know, May goes to the chateau and has to deal with problems with Hannah Heard, but I'm still doing plenty of invention, you know, on the page and in rewrites. And a lot of my creativity comes out in the deep revision stages. My early drafts are very poorly written. And I don't say that with any shame. They're just blueprints for the book that I'm going to write. In fact, I think of my finished first drafts as really just a very detailed, messy outline.
How did you go about outlining the complete plot of Everybody Knows?
I actually did something that I had never done before with this book. I had just been in a TV writer's room, and in TV writer's rooms, you know, it's a room full of writers, but you also have somebody called a writer's room assistant, who's the person who takes notes and helps organize everybody's thoughts. And right as I was getting ready to start writing this book, the room that I was in ended, and I had been working with this great writer's room assistant named Andrew Bain, who is thanked at the end of the novel. And I asked him if he would be interested in coming over and working with me for a week and helping me organize my thoughts. So it was really an invaluable experience because, again, you know, this is a very complicated book in plot, but I hope it doesn't read as very complicated, because I took such care in making sure that the story was properly supported and doesn't get confusing. And that's the reaction people have had to it so far. So I'm glad about that. But no, Andrew helped me organize my thoughts and make sure that I had a complete story that made sense and had good twists. And so that's something I'm going to try and do in the future if I can. Again, it's a real privilege to be around these kind of people and be able to utilize them. And I'm aware of that.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you're a big fan of James Ellroy, who is kind of the godfather of LA fiction. What does Ellroy's work mean to you?
Well, you're right. In this book, the stamp of Ellroy is very heavy in this. And he is one of my literary heroes, and to the point that my dog is named Ellroy. and I had actually just gotten the opportunity of a lifetime a little before starting this book, which was I got a chance to try to adapt his L.A. Confidential into a TV show. And it was a really amazing experience. And we did get to shoot a pilot. Unfortunately, it didn't go to series, but it was great. And I got to meet him, which was huge for me. I think that Ellroy is one of the great American writers, particularly in the middle of his run of like L.A. Confidential and White Jazz and American Tabloid, where he's telling these incredibly pulpy, heightened stories about Los Angeles and America that I think say more accurately about our country than some very, you know, realistic, kind of calmer works do, because I think America and Los Angeles, as a great American city, are pulpy places that are electric and alive and kind of crazy to be in the middle of. And I think Elroy captures that as well as any writer ever has. And that's why I spend so much of my time kind of studying him and what he does, and why, if there's somebody's fingerprints you can see on this book that aren't mine, they are his.
Mm-hmm. We're big Megan Abbott fans, and I know you are too. You've said that you could use more Megan Abbott in your writing style. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I think, you know, as much as I talk about James Elroy, I feel like Megan Abbott is the best crime writer working today. And I think I talked earlier about vibe or trying to catch a tone. And to me, Megan Abbott, from page one of one of her books, you just fall face forward into it. She paints a dream that is so vivid with her word choice and the way that she lives so deeply in the characters, and you feel what they feel, and you see not the concrete world that exists, but the world that they see, and you notice what they notice. And I just think it's really beautiful. And I try to kind of exist in a place, I don't know how well I succeed, but I try to exist in a place directly between Elroy and Abbott. And I think that's it's a nice, comfy world where I don't see a lot of other people aiming. But to me, you know, she has a new book coming out this year. I'll read it as soon as it comes out. I think she's the best one doing it today.
Mm-hmm. But you think, do you think that you create a tone with your work, don't you? Or do you not?
I absolutely do. I try very mm-hmm. hard to. And I think that, you know, I think that's why I respond to those writers so well, is because that is something that I'm very aware of and that I'm trying very hard to do. And I think I succeed, and everybody knows. I think it is a specific version of Los Angeles. Again, it's not a reporter's version of Los Angeles. It's a pulpier, more electric version where everything's sort of happening all at once and happening loudly. But to me, that is the Los Angeles that I think is the Los Angeles of my dreams, and I think a lot of other people's.
Understood. Jordan Harper, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Everybody Knows. As Megan Abbott has said, it's LA noir at its most incendiary.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jordan Harper is the author of Everybody Knows. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Kyle Edward Ball, Barbara Brandon Croft, and Jordan Harper. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
A duty few men are fit for, but you were born for.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
As a politician, he exceeds even myself.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
So you're the stellar witness.
I should have known.